And so I remember saying, like, as a half joke, half real, I'd rather be bald and fucking than not fucking at all. And then cut to like a year or two went by and my hair was thinning more. And I was like, I don't need to fuck ever again. Give me the fucking Propecia. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask, whose fault is it that you're gay? I'm Eric Williams, your host, and if you listened to last week's episode with the gorgeous Nori Reid, a few people messaged me that it was your favorite episode, and that made my fucking day. But also, you heard last week that I was about to go to a taping of Watch What Happens Live. It was definitely the best one I've ever been to. It was actual Bravo podcast people that had real opinions. It wasn't like celebrities that were just like, yeah, sure, my movie. So it was so fun. But my favorite part of the whole experience was really getting to study Andy Cohen. And he came out and he usually likes to do a Q&A. And before the show, the PA, who was so sweet, it was like her first week there, she was like, so everyone, make sure you ask a bunch of questions. So we had a lot of questions prepared. Matt really came prepared and he answered a bunch of questions, but he could not take his eyes off the twink in the front row. If you follow me on Instagram, you saw my impression. He was like, whoa, hey, whoa, like there he is. Whoa, you two together? It was like twink and some girl next to him.
Yeah, what, brother and sister?
He was like, what's your relationship?
Like, no, we're roommates. He's like, wow, okay, cool. So
it's like the thing is, he was eating it up, and luckily we were a really good audience. We had a lot of questions prepared, and all in all, a very good experience. And maybe I'm dragging this twink because I was mad that Andy Cohen's tongue wasn't up my ass. Jesus, I'm sorry for that visual. But my friends, this week we have an amazing episode with Kerry O'Donnell. Speaking of Bravo, he is one of the hosts of one of the most popular Bravo podcasts. It's called Sexy Unique Podcast. Yes, a nod to Sexy Unique Restaurant, Lisa Vanderpump's monstrosity. He is not only an incredible comedian, he's also a writer for Billy on the Street. He wrote for Heathers. He wrote for Summer Camp Island. His Twitter is one of the best out there. His handle is Ecario, Ecareyo. And he's also that handle on Instagram. If you are not a Bravo girly, do not stress out. We just talk about it the first chunk, and then it's off to the races. Also, you're going to want to stick around to the end of the episode, because Kerry does not say Sister Act 2 for his favorite Whoopi film. He's the first, a trailblazer, and it's a really good recommendation of a Whoopi film. And last thing is, the Patreon is officially launching next week, so stay tuned. As you know, I keep it real with you at all times. And look, this podcast is my biggest joy, but she's expensive. She takes time. So this is going to be the thing that enables me to continue making these gay-ass episodes. Please leave a review if you had a good time, if you enjoyed. Tell one friend you think that would love this episode. And my friends, this is Kerry O'Donnell. I want to tell you that I was a little nervous to interview you for this, because you are like one of my goals. Do you know what I mean? Like, Kerry O'Donnell. Gosh. It's like, you're so fucking funny. Your Twitter is incredible. Rick. Your podcast incredible. And so I like, now that I'm seeing you face to face, my nerves have gone, because obviously you're just
just like a mess in my apartment. And
I mean, you really look so haggard that I thought to myself, oh, he's nothing to aspire to. Yeah. No, but actually, I'm just so happy you're here. And thankfully, you're on That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
Well, now I should just leave, because I'm not going to be able to add anything to that.
That's not true. That is so not true.
That was so nice. I'm very, very nice of you. I'm really happy. I think you're really funny. And I have seen some cool people on this podcast, so I was excited to be
really asked. I'm glad you feel that way. And I've been so really just excited about the cool people that are doing it. I mean, you are truly a big get. I've got a big get for next week.
Who? Jennifer Coolidge? No.
Can you imagine? We talk about
vision
her enough.
Board.
Vision board. I do want to ask you, do you believe in vision boarding? Do you believe in manifestation?
Not really.
Okay. So do you think then why do good things happen, just because they happen randomly or because you work hard to get them?
I think both. I mean, look, I don't think there's anything wrong with like putting a goal down and being like, I would love, and listen, Jennifer Coolidge, like you could interview her probably. I don't think there's anything wrong with like aspiring to things. Like I have goals, right. But I feel like people are like very intense about vision boards, and like it feels very, I don't know. There's something very like, I feel like an anti-vaxxer would do a vision board.
Okay. Can I tell you something that I
would do?
It does make sense now, but it didn't make sense to me a few weeks ago. Cause I got to guest on a podcast that was like a Real Housewives podcast that the host was telling me that in LA, there's this like subset of people who are like yoga, like very, you think they're woo woo, but it turns out they're anti-vaxxing conservative on the down low. And I didn't know that existed.
Oh yeah. There's like a total, it's very LA heavy, but there's a total like category of people who are so woo woo that they're conservative.
Oh,
and like they like, you would think that you mistake them for being really liberal, but they actually are so out there that they veer into QAnon and like kind of conspiracy and like new age almost is like a gateway to QAnon, I feel like, in a lot of ways, especially in LA. But yeah, listen, LA, I've been here for 4 years. I was in New York for 5 years. There's like way more conservative people than you think in LA. Like,
but you know, I think that's true about New York in a way. Like when I moved here, I was like, thank God I'm with only gay people. I cannot wait just to be bathing in a liberal soup. And then it turns out I like visited 4 seconds outside of New York and it was just all Trump flags and like people calling me faggot.
Yeah. I mean, that's like here in like Orange County and like, but like I'll just be like casually driving in LA and I'll just be at a traffic light and the person in front of me has like a Blue Lives Matter flag. Or like, don't tread on me, or some kind of like with little whistleblower or dog whistle-y
sure,
stuff.
Sure, sure. Like,
And it's like in Beverly Hills or something. You know?
Well, speaking of Orange County and those types of people, are you happy that Kelly Dodd is off the show?
Yeah. I had to stop watching that show because of her.
I know. It's really tough to have people that are the villain, but then when they become like bad versions of the villain, it's not fun to watch.
I had a moment where I was like, okay, I kind of like this girl. Like she was funny. She was like, seemed unpretentious and kind of set up. And she was messy, but it was fun to watch. And then she just, I don't know what happened to her. I mean, she obviously was always like that, but like last year it was just excruciating to see her presence on social media. And then I watched like an episode or two of OC last year, but to see them navigate COVID was too much for me.
Not enjoyable. I think you tweeted that thank God Potomac is not showing us COVID, like them like getting into COVID at the beginning, and it's like truly it's enough.
Yeah, no, Potomac just do it kind of in media res, just like already happening. I was like, thank God, because we don't have to explain anything, we don't have to relive the shutdown when there's like that timestamp that says like March 13th, 2020. It's like, no. You know. So thank God for Potomac just in general, but especially
in general. Yes. You know what's tough though? I think speaking of villains, like, do I think that Giselle's a villain? Not exactly. I think she does sort of rile up people's feathers in that way. But I really veer close lately to loving the Karen Giselle feud. But sometimes it's like I'm so actively always not on Giselle's side that I'm like, do I not like Giselle?
It's tough. I mean, I think they have a deep love for each other, which is why it's so fun to watch, because it's like very frenemy love hate. And they're like, truly that show is like a love story about Giselle and Karen and their fraught relationship. But yeah, they're tough. I mean, I love Giselle. I know people are divided on her, but I think she's great. I think she's funny. Karen is like, you can't not respect her or think she's so fun to watch, because she's just, you know, she's camp, she's glamorous, She's very witty and she has a lot going on under the surface.
She is very witty. And I think she's also like grown with her vulnerability of knowing like, oh, it actually makes us like her more when she shows A, how weird she is, B, how devastated she is. And I think she's definitely in like God tier level of Housewives.
I totally agree. And I think it's funny that that show has just maintained the original cast mostly. And I think that's, it's like, it works for them. Like they have such a, they have a sweet spot with these, especially the four women that have been there since the start.
I know. I hope it never ends. I mean, do you think in our lifetime there's going to be a day when Bravo is not going to be having any Real Housewives on the air?
Maybe. It's kind of weird. I mean, I sometimes wonder watching it, I'm like, do we need Housewives anymore?
Dark, Carrie, dark questions.
I mean, I love it. I would be sad if it was over, but I wonder if it was like a burst of something in time and now it's maybe past its prime. But then you have things like Potomac, and like this season of Beverly Hills is iconic, and Salt Lake City next season is obviously going to be crazy with Jen Shah. And like, so there's Roni I've completely checked out of, so I haven't even been watching it.
It's hard to even talk about Roni because it was my number one for so long, and it's like watching a friend be sick.
Oh my God, it is. I watched that first episode and I liked Ebony. I like Leah fine, but Ramona had to go.
I know.
Well, though it's hard because she did supply so many amazing moments in the past.
We'll talk about loving to hate someone in the villain. It's like I think I've talked about this on this podcast before, but I got to go to Watch What Happens Live yesterday, actually. And
amazing.
It was so fun. Or maybe it was 2 days. It was 2 days ago, but it was like, it was Danny Pellegrino, the Crappens guys. It was Sasha from Bravo Breakdown. It was by far the best episode I've seen of Watch What Happens Live in a long time. They were just so smart and funny. But the reason I bring it up is because I got to go a couple years ago and Ramona was the guest, and she walked out to the bar area before the show, which you would think, oh, she's here to say hi to fans or be a human being. And she stood there frozen with the big eyes blinking. And when people try to take pictures, she just kind of like stiffly moved her body and didn't want to take the photo, which obviously she's known for that. But it was like, why did you walk out here in the first place? And from that moment on, I was like, don't meet your heroes, don't meet your villains. Keep them on TV.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've interacted with a few reality stars and like, that's not a brag. And some of them are very awkward.
Well, it's also, it goes to show you where like some people on social media are so larger than life, or they're maybe so showing so much of their body or whatever it is. And then the second you're in a room with them, it's clearly a very well curated image that they want to project, but it might not exactly be with reality. And that's what I think is one of the most jarring things.
Well, you know, it's especially with Housewives, like some of these people weren't meant to be stars. Mm-hmm. Like some of them are stars, like Giselle and Karen are stars.
Yeah.
You know, Bethany, lover or hater, she's a star. You know, Beverly Hills, you know, Kyle's, you know what I mean? NeNe Leakes. All these people that are, you know, polarizing, but they're stars. And then you have Ramona. Yeah, she's been like, she's supplied us with some great moments, some iconic lines, some like crazy, facial reactions. But I think, I don't know, she's not really like a star. So I think in person, she's probably kind of uncomfortable, probably, like with all the situation that she's in. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I think she's uncomfortable and also, unfortunately, a bad person. I mean,
I don't think she's bright.
But sadly, I think like, and obviously we'll talk about more than just me grilling you about Bravo, but like, I do think that Avery's probably a good person.
Yeah. She probably is. I think she probably understands that she seems like from a very young age that she understood that her mom was like not well.
Yes.
But I think I just don't think you can grow up in that household and
be completely all right.
Untarnished. Yeah.
Right. Anyway. So, okay. Well, here's a question. Say
kids
in
are
a
off
world-
limits.
I was just going to say, don't talk about the kids. Don't touch the kids. If let's say in a world that Mario, Ramona's ex-husband, was gay and he approached you at a bar and he was like, hey, do you want to get out of here? Do you go with him? And then what do you do if you do?
Yeah.
Correct.
I would let him. I'd let him go for it. You know, I would let him kind of just like throw me around, knock me around a room, like in a pillowcase. You know, I mean, he's undeniably very hot and very daddy. And I mean, he's clearly a bad person, but he's very sexy. I'm into it.
I choose to ignore the fact that he probably is another villain and just focus on the fact that he has a gorgeous body, a handsome face, and he's probably really bossy.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Cheers to that. Well, the only last thing I do want to get your take on with Bravo before we move on is I do want to ask about Erica Jane. Do you think she's guilty? What's happening?
I've been really back and forth. We've talked about it on Sexy Unique podcasts, but like I'm kind of very 50-50 on her. At first, I watched The Housewife and The Hustler, so obviously that like influenced my view of her, knowing that it's like blood money and knowing just how devastated these victims were, and it felt really wrong. But then I was like, but I could also see she's the third wife. This guy has been this powerhouse well before she came into the picture. She probably was just like, oh, this is just how it is. Like, he's just getting money's just magically appearing because he's Tom Girardi. And I don't need to ask any questions. So I can see, like, by complicit by just not asking questions, which is not the same as, like, her being a conspirator.
Yeah.
But then on the episode this week when she was crying and had the mascara running, that was, as my mom pointed out, she was like, I haven't worn mascara like that since the 90s. Like, she clearly had an agenda with putting that kind of mascara on.
I agree. I think it's a really good point, though, that you're saying that she, by not asking questions, that could be the where her guilt lives, but doesn't necessarily mean that she knew as much as people think she did.
Yeah, I don't think she was. I mean, I think she's a very smart woman, but I don't think she was like stealing from the funds. But then when she hinted that he has some kind of dementia, I was like, this feels like she was told to say this by his team. And this makes me think that she's in cahoots with him. Like, that was when I heard that, I was like, I heard the alarm going off. I was like, because that's what he's peddling, is that he's taking like the Harvey Weinstein Cosby route of like, oh, I'm like this old man who's wasting away, I can't be in jail. And the fact that she kind of was like, and I, you know, I'm like, Tom, you can't see, you can't hear, you know, and it's like, oh, are you being told, are you in cahoots with him now? That made me kind of think that she was.
This is so hard, Carrie. Now this is like watching another friend that you like die. I just, you know, I find that I get very naive about some of these things, but because I've like rooted for her, I just want to believe that she is as innocent as possible, but clearly something is up. And when we before Watch What Happens Live, like Andy did the whole, he, you know, anybody have any questions? And he came out and people asked pretty, you know, easy questions for him to answer. One that was asked, actually, Matt asked, was if how's Vanderpump going with, you know, how's the shooting going? And all Andy said was, is I actually just got an email from them, from the executive producer, and it's in my pocket right now. And we were like,
whoa.
So that could go in any direction. I'm not exactly sure what, if that's positive or negative, but I wanted to ask, obviously, his feelings about Erica, but I wanted to do it in a very angled way. So I wanted to ask, have you watched the Housewife and the Hustler? Like, I want to ask him if you watched that, but I didn't get a chance to ask him. But he did say that Jen Shaw was one of the biggest shocks of the past few years of Housewives. Someone asked, like, what is one of the biggest shocking moments for him? And he said when he found out about Jen Shaw, it was like very out of the blue.
That was crazy.
And she's still doing her glam. And
yeah, I mean, but the hearing the voicemail she left, some like one of her victims saying her name was like Sally, and she was calling from, you know, this, like leaving a voicemail, trying to scam, like going to the extent of leaving a voicemail to scam.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, I think it leaked on like Radar or something, or TMZ, but it was like Jen cold calling people who were part of who victims that she was going to get swept up in her telemarketing scam. And she would be like, "Hi, this is Sally from American, you know, Western Insurance calling you." And you can hear Jen's voice and she's acting. She's pretending to be someone else. And it sent a chill down my spine. I was like, this is a psychopath.
So, I mean, clearly a psychopath. The way that she dealt with any sort of drama on the show was like, oh, okay, now we're hitting people. Yeah, that is not good for her legal battle.
Not good at all.
Well, listen, I want to say that not only are you a host of an incredible podcast, but you're also one of the people that gave me the strength to be able to admit out loud that I take Propecia. And I want to thank you for that.
That is going to make my day. Because I am so happy to know that it had even one person. All you need is, there could be 100 people in the room, and all you need is one person to also be on Propecia. I have been on it for like 4 years, or no, 3 years, and it's really boosted my confidence and also helped my hair.
Your hair looks great.
So does yours. And I think... No, it does. And I think gay men are like, I mean, all men are kind of self-conscious about hair loss, but I think gay men especially, like, no one wants to talk about those.
Carrie, it is dark. A lot of darkness in my head. I mean, like, I had a haircut yesterday, and I got to the point where my girly, Adita, we love, she uses these texturizing scissors at the end of haircuts, or used to, where it would, like, look like it would take out a fair amount of the volume of hair. And at some point she would do it like all over the top of my hair, which is where I'm most insecure. And I think that it just like made my hair look thinner. And I was too afraid to speak up until the last haircut. I was like, hey, I think I'm just like really trying to maintain what I do have up there. So if you want to just, I don't know, just the back or the sides of that. But she was like, well, I was trying to blend it to make it all. I was like, I understand there are techniques. I understand that there are reasons for these things. But just for me, can we not help me? And like SOS. And she honored the cause. And so that was my last haircut. And then yesterday, she got those texturizing scissors out again. And when I tell you, Carrie, my stomach just drops. And I was watching a horror film unfold in the mirror in front of me. But as she got closer up to my hair, she stopped and she just kept it on the sides. And I said, Adita, you are an ally to the hair thinning crowd.
Wow. No, that's true. That is true allyship. That's non-performative allyship with the hair loss community, the gay hair loss community. I was just kind of like, fuck it. Like it wasn't extreme. I was just noticing like recession. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do this. And I think it's funny to talk about, and I like talking about it because it's in some way like an anti-anxiety medication. Because like, yes, it's working and it has regenerated, stimulated hair growth and like prevented hair loss in like areas that I was worried about. But it also is just like, you feel like you have a little armor.
Yeah.
And the one, you know, obviously there's like side effects that everyone's afraid of.
Well, I almost get frustrated when people talk about the side effects, because when I first went to a dermatologist, when I noticed like a recession as well, the dermatologist made it sound like it's very, very likely that I won't be able to get hard when I take Propecia. And so I remember saying, like, as a half joke, half real, I'd rather be bald and fucking than not fucking at all. And then cut to like a year or two went by and my hair was thinning more. And I was like, I don't need to fuck ever again. Give me the fucking Propecia. And then I took it and it has not affected me a cent. Like, I've been completely fine. And I feel like people overblow that side effect.
They do. I think... I mean, I'm also on Lexapro, so like I'm watching like a slow, like you would think that I'd be watching like a slow race to like which one will make me have ED, but it hasn't affected yet.
So I'm glad you said that, because I I have a segment on this podcast I haven't done in a while, partly out of frustration. And the segment is called Me, Myself, and SSRI, because I'm on a new journey of getting on the anti-anxiety medication. And the update is that my psychiatrist has now, for the third time, upped my dosage because I don't think it's working. So I'm now on 150 milligrams of Zoloft, and she's giving this as the last-ditch effort until I have an appointment next week. And if it still doesn't work, then I think she's going to try Lexapro. And I said to my therapist, I was like, what if I have just unrealistic expectations of what I will feel like, and I'm just always going to be kind of fucked in that part of my life?
Yeah, it's like when, I mean, I'm sober now, but like, it's like whenever I like would do ecstasy or something, I'd be like, is it working? You know? Mm. Yeah, I mean, Lexapro, I haven't taken anything but that. I take Boost Bar to supplement it, but I'm on daily Lexapro. I take it twice a day, like once in the morning, once in the evening. And it's really helped me. I've been on it for a few years. I feel like sometimes I get glimmers. I'm like, oh, like this is what it must be like to be like a white straight man, you know, straight man's like moments of feeling ease, mm-hmm. that like non that are like clamoring to get to, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's not an overwhelming feeling of like, I feel so great. It's just like the dread is just turned down a lot.
That's all I want, is I want the dread to be turned down enough notches that I feel like, okay, things are a little more manageable.
Yeah, it makes it, you can manage it. Like, I'm always going to have, I think to be alive is to have like existential dread and like mm-hmm. anxiety, especially as like a gay man or a queer person. And I think you're just turning it down a little, you know.
Please, that's all I want.
It's a little relief. I think you'll figure out whatever you need.
And I think, honestly, you might have been like a Lexapro angel sent to me, and this is just a sign from the universe that maybe that's going to be the... Because I said to my psychiatrist, I was like, I trust you. My gut is telling me that Zoloft ain't the thing. And she was like, well, let's go up one more time. And it messes up my sleep every time we go up, and so my dreams are insane. Matt told me I screamed in the middle of the night. Like, screamed. Like a full voice.
Whoa.
And then he said a few nights ago that I was talking for a 15-second string, and he almost woke me up to give me this. What was I saying? He goes, I at the time I heard some words, but now I don't remember, but it was mostly unintelligible. So can you imagine you're sleeping next to someone and all of a sudden it's just like, hey, like a full scream, and then just like a mangled
speaking in tongue.
Yeah, I'm doing full like ancient rituals. Yeah, so I will say, while sexual side effects has mostly been pretty not there, I will say that the sleeping when I up a dosage, ooh, not good.
I noticed that like when I first got on Lexapro, I would wake up at like 5:30 or 6 every morning and just kind of like lay there.
That's exactly it.
And like I would be able to sleep, but then I would wake up really too early, like an hour earlier or a half hour earlier than I usually do, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, what would happen to me was I would have a bit of a tough time falling asleep, but then I would wake up thinking that it was ready to be the next day, and it would be 1:30 in the morning. It would be like, oh.
But that's also like the best. Like when I remember I had this vivid memory of being a kid and waking up for school, taking a shower, and then my mom knocked on the door of the bathroom, and she was like, Carrie, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm getting ready for school. And she's like, it's 12:30. In the morning. And I was like, ooh, I get to go back to, you know what I mean? And then I like got back into bed. I was warm from the shower. I was like fresh. And I was just like, oh, another 7 hours, you know? Like
another 7 hours.
Yeah, it felt like such a gift.
I mean, that is a gift. But you know, I love that you really angle that as a positive, because for me, that brings back like terrible memories of having so much anxiety that I one time woke up because I was so nervous about something and I took my shower and it was 3 a.m. and I was just like, not like, ooh, I get to go back for another 5 hours, but I was more like, you're damaged and no, nothing or no one can help you.
That's a phenomenon that needs to be discussed more, like mistaken showers.
Mistaken showers next on A&E right after intervention. I do think that is important to be studied. But speaking of important, we have to ask a very important question from this podcast. Carrie O'Donnell, who do you blame for making you gay? Whose fault?
Oh my gosh. Probably my nana's being in her closet, her like giant walk-in closet.
Being in your nana's closet, your nana was not in the closet and came out as gay.
No. Being in like in her literal, like going into her closet that had like a pulley light, and I went in and just smelled like old clothes. And I, when I was like 4 or 5, would just be in there and like, you know.
I love that so much.
Going like this. And also the swish, the movement of a dress that I, a dress that I used to put on at preschool, and I would wear a dress every day, the movement of the made me gay.
Oh, yeah, that's good, Carrie, because I think that a lot of people, and I'm sure like the day that I have kids, when a child is like really just like leading with their truth, it's going to be hard not to think into it too much, because so many kids, I think kids who also are not queer also experiment in that way. But also a lot of queer kids also really do lean into, ooh, what is it like to wear a dress? I would totally do the towel wrap around my head, pretending I had a gorgeous updo. I would put a blanket around my tits and have a gorgeous gown.
I would do that too. I would put a towel and I would like do the arm pop in the mirror. And but I think culturally what made me gay was there was an episode of two things. There was a moment in Are You Afraid of the Dark where there was this terrifying episode where at the end the girl realizes she's an alien, and her people are, her like alien kind are calling to her, and then her friends come into the room to save her, and she turns around and her face, she has no face. She's just like a giant like egg head, and she has no face, and I was like, I'm gay. And then also this moment in The Craft when Robin Tooney is balancing her pencil on her desk, and Neve Campbell like looks over at her, and she like looks at her, and I was just like, yes,
gay.
Like,
I mean,
it's like that,
it's very, so it's otherworldly. You know that you are a different species. You know that you are not of this earth. You are not of this.
Yeah, I was trying system. To think of like obvious, there's obviously like sexual thing, like seeing certain guys or like being triggered by like Matthew Lillard and She's All That or something, but like feeling the stirrings. But I'm talking more about like on a spiritually queer level, I was,
yes,
like, or in my gay soul was when like the moments like that happened.
Can we unpack the faceless head of what exactly do we think spoke to you about why that was like, oh, I'm gay?
I don't know. I just think it like made me feel different. Like I was like, something about this is, I don't know. Do you know those moments? It's like, it's almost like, it's like unspecified gayness.
Yes. Yeah, I've been diagnosed with
unconscious gay callings, I feel like.
100%. And you know what? I don't think I've said this on this podcast that I really would do for years growing up, is that I would, talking about like unspecified gayness, when I knew deep down from those moments that I was gay and I really did not want to be, I would do every day at school, like if I had like a crumpled piece of paper and I had to throw it into a trash can, I would say, if I can make this into that trash can, then I'm not gay. And then I would throw it into the trash can. And if it made it, I'd be like, thank fucking God. And if it didn't, I'd be like, well, and there it is, written in history. And so I just like, I like knew on that spiritual level, but I was trying to do anything I can to have like the spirits come back down to earth and put the paper in the basket so that we can undo it, because I didn't want to be that.
It's so weird, the like bargains we make with ourselves when we're like young, being like, if I do this, it means that I'm actually, the thing I'm fearing that I am and know that I am is actually not the case.
Definitely. And it's really quite sad that those were the thoughts. And I say this a lot, but I just deeply hope that people who are different in any way, and that it's becoming more normalized, that like, I mean, I interviewed Nori Reed last week for the podcast, and just talking about, you know, growing up queer in Kentucky. She's incredible. So fucking funny. But like, I was just like, man, it's better now, but it still has a long way to go in trans visibility and representation.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, it's just,
I mean, there's like clearly some states like are at war with trans, like, again, like they've declared war on trans people, like certain,
right,
with like, so it's not over by any means, and it's disgusting.
And I do think that that's happening. What is one of the most disgusting parts about it is that you think from an adult perspective it would be very obvious that to make a law that actively is unkind to a group of very innocent people would not make the people, especially at a child level, child age, feel like they're wanted or allowed to exist. And so when you're like, yeah, you're going to make it so that these types of people aren't allowed to like go into the bathroom they want or play on the sports team they want, it's just because of who they are. I'm like, yeah, of course, then they're going to grow up with a very fucked up mentality of what their worth is and their value. And we don't need to, you know, really.
No, it's crazy that like when we were growing up, like gay was used as like stupid.
Yeah.
Like, so that's, I mean, that's so, it seems small, but like, and I used to say it too. I'd be like, oh, that's so gay. And like, that's like trauma, you know, like that's a lot like that sticks with our, in our heads and in the back of our heads, like gay means bad or stupid.
Right.
And it was just so like accepted as like that was the word to use. It's like crazy. And yeah, like I remember I did a health, we had to film videos for health class, and I was the director of my group, and I like came up with this idea that it was supposed to be about like the dangers of taking pills or something. And like, I think it was fifth grade actually.
Hey,
we had to show them to the class, and we showed our video. And then at the end, our teacher was like, does anyone have any questions for the group? And this kid raised his hand and he went, Carrie, you talk with your hands a lot. And everyone started laughing. Oh, and I was just like, but those signals of like, that's not okay to be like expressive. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. You just gave me a full flashback of like why are people so fucking focused on what our hands are doing when we're, you know, 10 years old? I was literally, will not name the people to protect the innocent, but when I was a kid, I was asked in front of people, hey, Eric, look at your fingernails. And they wanted to see if I was going to do a handout versus fingers pointed to my face. And I knew what they were doing because one time I was caught doing it the other way. And then I remember hearing like, if you put an earring in the wrong ear, then that means you're gay. Like, and when I came out, I remember I was like very much in like a social justice place of like making sure to right the wrongs that I had been told as a kid to my family, who like, to their credit, are so accepting and wonderful, but needed to like get out of the practice of some things. And I was like, remember when you said that if you put an earring in your left ear, it is right, and if it's on your right ear, it's wrong? Well, wrong being gay, so gay is wrong. It's like, those are the things you can't say to anyone.
Yeah, and like with the hand finger thing, it's like, guess what, bitch, I do both ways. Like, doesn't mean I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I can be gay. It doesn't, it's so, the things that we're trained and like conditioned to be like, oh God, like, you know, it's like, it's so
or crazy. Like crossing your legs when you sit, like that's another one, I think.
Yeah,
well, I do want to celebrate you and say, you know, speaking of It Gets Better, I want to congratulate you on your engagement. Mazel tov, Carrie.
Oh, thank you so much. And you're married, right? I see.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Yeah, I we got engaged like a month ago. So, or a little more than a month ago. It was a nice surprise. And
oh,
it was
so exciting.
You know, immediately just thrilled. And, you know, I think for a while I was like, I don't think I need to get married. And then as soon as he asked me, I was like, yes, I need to get married. Like, I want to be married to this man.
You're so beautiful together. And I really identify with that because I remember when Matt and I got married, and I truly said this for the years leading up. I was like, if I get married one day and I have to say that I have a husband out loud, it feels so weird. It feels almost performative. And that was me just internalized homophobia, I think, because the second I got married, I was like, no, I have a fucking husband. Oh, my husband? That's my husband. And I got a little dragged the first few episodes of this podcast because I only would say, well, you know, my husband. And it was like, okay, we get it. You have a fucking husband. But I think to my fucking defense, it was more of just like, I forget that people know Matt or like have heard enough of him that it's like, yeah, we know who he is. But it also, I think I had a lot of trauma and baggage with saying the word husband because it was from my childhood of still being embarrassed of being gay, and I had to actively work against it. And I still, in some settings, I was in wherever state I was, either in the Midwest or the South or whatever. And someone's like, oh, is this yours? And I was about to say, oh, no, it's my husband's. And I almost like got nervous to say it. It's like, oh, it's no, we're together.
No, it's like, weird. Fuck. I mean, yeah, there's still like there's places where like if we go like outside of LA or something and like we go into somewhere and I like will quietly say to Simon, like, can we be gay here? You know, because it's, you know, because it's not, people still, there's still places that are very weird about it. And
yeah,
no, I'm excited though. And he like asked my family without me knowing and some of my friends knew. So it was like a happy kind of conspiracy. So I was very overjoyed about it.
Have you been thinking about planning the wedding? Like, where are you at with that?
Kind of loosely. I think we're definitely going to do it out in the desert where we got engaged. I think we both want it to be very like just as relaxed as possible. Maybe in like a year and a half or so or 2 years.
Amen.
But yeah, it is like when I moved in here, I ran into one of his neighbors who's kind of like a busybody of the building, and she saw us and she was like, oh, hi. And I was like, oh, I'm Carrie. And she went, oh, are you you two buds?
Ay vey.
And Simon was like, no, we're boyfriends. And she just went, oh, okay. You know, I was just like, we're buds. We're roommates.
You two buds?
Yeah. You special buds?
You know, I was in a scenario recently where someone referred to Matt as my friend. And I don't remember what, but that was tough.
Yeah, it's like completely dismissive and
yeah, like we're actually so sorry to tell you, legally bound under the law of this country. Sorry, babe.
Your friends.
Well, listen, we talked about Are You Afraid of the Dark, and I want to just give a throwback to that because I do think that is an inherently queer show. I don't exactly know why, but maybe just because like I think a lot of queer people like to be scared.
Yeah, I think queer people have a one toe dipped into the like netherworld. So I think we have like somewhat of a connection to the other side in some way.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. There's very much an otherworldliness. And I just watched the horror movies on Netflix. That is Fear Street. Did you watch those yet?
I started watching the first one and then I was kind of like, I don't know about this, but now I want to, because everyone's telling me how good it is. So I'm going to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm famously not a scary movie person just because I am too fragile. But I watched those and I was like, yeah, I'm totally here for that. Because it's like slightly campy, but also like the only parts it's disgusting, Carrie. It's like disgusting. The graphic murder is like that part I can't do.
I love scary movies. I prefer movies that aren't too gory. Like I don't like the Saw movies. I can't handle like torture. No.
I will torture say porn. I think psychological thrillers I'm into, like I you know, I do these videos of gay ass movies and I think that I'm realizing in this moment that's The Skeleton Key with Kate Hudson. I think that's a gay movie. I remember loving it so much, and it's like she's in this old house in New Orleans and there's magic involved with this key, and that's really all I remember. But I think that's gay.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of one-off horror movies from the 2000s that are just like inexplicable when you think about them now. Like Kate Hudson starring in a Southern horror movie. Like what?
On what like planet?
It's literally a Mad Lib. But that, I think maybe that's why you feel some kind of queer affinity for it, because it's just like,
okay, I have another one that's another Mad Lib that I have an affinity for is I got to go to a screening of the movie with Candace Bergen, Jane Fonda,
The Book Club,
Mary Book Club, and that is another Mad Lib movie. And is it good? I don't care, because it is everything.
Oh, it's amazing. I saw that with a writer's room that I was in. We went after work one day, we all went to go see Book Club, and we were just it was like the best moment of my life. We were just howling in the theater.
I mean, doesn't Candace Bergen like get railed in that movie?
Yeah, I think so. And Diane Keaton is Diane Keaton in it?
Yes.
She's like she's being like elder abused by her children. Or so, like they're like psychologically like tort, like they're not letting, they have her basically on like house arrest. Andy Garcia is like this hot ass
rich guy,
you know, private pilot who also is really rich and lives in Sedona, and he's like, I just want to like have sex with you like in the desert and like make your life great. And she's like, awesome. And then her children are like, no mom, you can't do that, that's bad, who is this man?
Mom, why like, would you go fuck the hot rich guy when we can just abuse you at home?
Yeah, we want you to be in our like condo in Scottsdale, mom. You can't go to Sedona. And she's like, why not? You know, and it's, that was kind of a strange plot point.
It was her, and wasn't one of her daughters like
Alicia Silverstone?
Yes. Ugh, you know what? I maybe a hot take, but I feel like there could have been so much more for adult Alicia Silverstone, like from Clueless to one of the abusive daughters of Diane Keaton.
She's always going to be an icon, but her social media presence is very strange. She's, her relationship with her son is very weird. I feel like he's,
or oh, she, right.
She like coddles him, and I think he's homeschooled. Not that there's anything wrong with homeschooling, but she like, remember she would chew up food and like spit it into his, or like feed it into his mouth or something.
And there's a recent, like her first TikTok video was like them acting out like a romantic part of Clueless.
But she was in a horror movie that I watched last year that was really good. She had a really good part. She's
good
having
her.
Like a quiet resurgence, I think.
I fully am here to support her resurgence. I hope that she gets to climb back to the top of the canon of amazing movies. But do you think, speaking of interesting celebrities in horror movies, Kyle Richards in
Halloween Kills.
Halloween Kills. Will she be good? Will it be good?
She's going to be great. I can't wait for that movie. It looks so silly and fun and like ridiculous. Like, the trailer they showed, by the way, was like the whole movie. But I love Halloween. I have such a connection to that movie because the writer of Halloween grew up in my town and named the town in Halloween after my town.
It's what?
Haddonfield. Well, I'm from Haddonfield, New Jersey, which is like the only place called Haddonfield that exists. And Deborah Hill grew up there. So they changed the name of the town to Haddonfield, Illinois. And that's always where Michael Myers returns to. And so shit. Kyle, and they like kind of made it look like our town, even though they filmed it in WeHo in Pasadena. But Kyle Richards being in that is just so perfect. And I don't know, I think she's actually a good actor.
I do so, too. I've always been on Kyle's side. And I actually, a friend that listens to the podcast was like kind of horrified that I'm a Kyle Richards stan. And I will.
Why?
Some people really find it tough to support her, and I find that it's not tough because she knows the gig. She has a perfect, gorgeous, weed-obsessed Jewish Mexican husband. Her daughters love each other so fiercely. And yeah, has she stirred up some drama for the sake of drama? Yeah, but also she's doing it to make her paycheck. And what else is going to, what we need less drama on Beverly Hills? No.
No, Kyle's a pro. She's a pro. She's a Hollywood industry kid. She knows what she's doing. She knows the assignment. She's delivered for 12 years now, 11 years. And she's been part of some iconic Housewives moments, and I think she's great. I think she's annoying sometimes, but I think she's great.
I can totally get behind that.
There's a reason why she's stayed this long. Like, she knows what she's doing, and we get Kathy because of her.
Thank God. That's the world. If the world needed one thing, and it was Kathy Hilton. I will say that, speaking of strong women, I want to ask, before we say goodbye, one of our famous podcast questions. If the world is ending and you can only save one character actress, Carrie, who would you save?
Tilda Swinton.
Oh my God. I didn't even think of that as an option for you to say. And I'm so glad you did, because you were one of the two people behind Not Tilda Swinton, correct?
Yes.
I want to, so if anyone listening did not follow, is it still, all the tweets are still up, right?
Yeah, they're still up, but we don't do it anymore, really.
So go to Not Tilda Swinton, and they are, before I even knew you or knew who you were, I was a huge Not Tilda Swinton fan, so I want you to know that. And they're just the most, like, I don't even know how to describe it. They're just, like, as if Tilda Swinton is tweeting, but they are the most unhinged, otherworldly things that only Tilda Swinton could say.
It was fun. It's so crazy. Like, that was... We first did it in like 2012, and I feel like it wouldn't happen today, I don't think, because Twitter is so different, but it was definitely like the right time. It was fun, and the best part about that was, like, a year later, we got an email from her that she had seen the Twitter and, like, loved it, and was like, we didn't know it was her at first because she had kind of a weird email. And she was like, don't tell anyone about this, but, like, I just want to know, like, I'm so proud to be part of this, and, like, I think you guys rock.
That makes my day, Carrie. That makes me so happy.
And then she signed it, now go eat your computer. Love you, Hilda. And it was just like, that was kind of every, sort of the only validation me and Eli, who I did it with, Eli Uden, needed. So
that's all you need is for Tilda Swinton from a random ass email account to say, now go eat your computer.
Yeah.
Well, with that, before we sign off, I feel like there's so many rapid fire questions, but I did not prep you for this, but I'm really curious what your answer is. If you had to choose a favorite Whoopi Goldberg film, what would it be?
Karina.
Carrie, no one's answered that before. Can you tell me why it's your favorite?
I just watched it a lot growing up, and it was a comforting movie to me, and I just love her and Tina Majorino together and Ray Liotta. I mean, there's other obvious ones what was the one where she was like the basketball coach?
Oh, fuck. See, I have seen that one. I'm devastated to tell you that I haven't seen Karina. Are you mad?
Hold on. No. No. Hold on. Eddie,
yeah.
She inherits a basketball team. That was great. I remember seeing that with my aunt, who I don't speak to anymore. But she took my sister and me to see Eddie.
Well, at least she did that.
But Karina's great. It's sweet.
What's the, before you explain, I actually had another, what is the movie that Whoopi Goldberg is in that there's Gerard Depardieu is a ghost? Or, like, he's, like, an imaginary friend?
Oh, yes. Hold on. She was... That was also a movie I loved.
Bogus.
She, like, inherits...
I haven't thought of that movie in years.
She becomes, like, the guardian of her former friend's son. Who's someone famous. Who's the kid in that movie?
Oh, is it Haley Joel Osment?
Haley Joel Osment.
It is. It's Haley Joel Osment.
And they live in, like, Newark.
Yes.
Newark,
who coincidentally, I peed next to Haley Joel Osment in college.
Wow.
So what's Karina?
I'm trying not to say sister act because it's like, obviously that's her best movie, you know, her most, but like, I'm trying to think of like a deep cut Whoopi Goldberg.
I mean, Karina.
She becomes like a babysitter, like a nanny for helping out with this widow and his daughter. Ray Liotta. I think it's like in 1960s LA, and she becomes like the mom to this daughter, and it's really sweet. And then at one point she leaves, and there's this running theme of Karina, Whoopi Goldberg, whenever she's at a stoplight, she'll go and like blow air, and then the stoplight changes to green.
Wait, I love that. And also Joan Cusack is in it.
Yes. And there's this devastating moment where she leaves for a while and is no longer working with the family. And the daughter, Tina Margarino, who was in a bunch of movies when we were young, is like weeping at the stoplight. And she's going just to try to get it to turn green, and it doesn't. And it's so sad.
I just got chills. I'm not just joking. I got chills. Whoopi Goldberg, there's no end of incredible movies and incredible moments. And I'm thankful to her. And I'm really thankful to Carrie O'Donnell for coming on this gosh darn gay ass podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. What a way to start my weekend.
Another great chat on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I think my biggest takeaway is that Tilda Swinton is as weird as you think she'd be. Make sure you follow Carrie O'Donnell at eCario, ECAREYO, and follow me at Eric Wills. If you want to keep up to date with the Patreon that launches next week, follow us on Instagram at GayAssPodcast. And again, send this to one friend that you think would love and give us a 5-star review with a little note. It really, really helps more people get eyes on this. And I want to spread the gay ass gospel. Oh, happy day. We'll see you next week for one of the most popular podcast hosts out of all podcasts. And so hit that subscribe or follow button and stay gay as hell.
Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.